I have author, columnist for The Times and broadcaster Matthew Saeed. And we're also joined by Michael Muthukrishna, Associate Professor of Economic Psychology at the London School of Economics, who also provided input for Matthew's book. Michael, welcome to the show. Thank you for giving us your time.
Nice to be here, Alexis.
Michael, you have talked about intellectual arbitrage. And the moment I saw that phrase, I thought, I need to find out what that means.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a way that I describe the way in which different disciplines come up with answers. So the problem is that, you know, we're each in our little silos and we're solving our own little problems that apply only to us. But many of the solutions that we discover probably apply to other disciplines. And so there's a great opportunity in just looking across the road to see what other people are doing and bringing them over to your discipline. I mean, many Nobel Prizes have been won in that way, stealing from psychology.
So that's very much what Matthew's been covering in the book. Matthew, what did you mine from Michael? What did he give you as part of your book?
Well, I think Michael's written two of the most brilliant papers that I've read in recent years. One was called Innovation in the Collective Brain, and it's downloadable for anyone who wants to read it, which is partly about diversity, how societies that innovate fast have big collective brains, different people sharing information, improving on ideas, and going forward as a consequence. He also wrote a wonderful paper, slightly less related to this, but not insignificant, which is about a problem in psychology, what he calls a problem of theory, which is that psychologists don't really have an anchoring theory with which to develop their ideas. So Michael, I knew he was coming on the show, but so I don't want to overflatter him, but I think the work that he's been doing, and you really should ask his work on corruption. I mean, his paper on corruption, which is corruption needs to be understood through different levels of cooperation, that is definitely worth getting into the conversation.
Well, Michael, I think there's a great tee up. I'm having spent most of my television career being a scammer and a con man, I'm all for listening to your thoughts on corruption.
I mean, I'm not sure where to start here. I guess what unifies all those three papers is that there is this kind of emerging theory of human behavior that we're discovering, something that kind of unifies all of these different things. And it describes the way that we eventually began to develop so much knowledge that it surpassed the abilities of even the smartest among us to hold. And that's how we, you know, ended up with a collective brain where we have to share the computation, if you like. And so where corruption comes into it is that to do that, we had to work together. And there are different mechanisms that allow us to work together. Some of those mechanisms are across the biological world, like shared genetic similarity. And others, you know, things that you find in a workplace, like direct reciprocity. You help me, I help you. But the problem is that each of those levels of cooperation can undermine one another. So the most effective means that we as a species have discovered is through some kind of institution, some kind of, you know, government that does the punishing of free riders and con men for us. But when individuals start to use those smaller levels, like, for example, if a president gives his daughter a contract, we say, oh, that's nepotism. But actually, you know, it's this genetic shared similarity, what we call inclusive fitness, undermining our institutions. Or, you know, if somebody gives a job to a friend, that's cronyism, but also direct reciprocity, undermining our meritocracy.
I have no idea who you might be referring to whatsoever. Michael, I find this absolutely fascinating because it's dawned on many people, I'm sure, when they look around them and they go, well, half the stuff that I use in my life, I have no understanding of how it works, what it does, the full potential of it. If you look at a smartphone, for example, or anything that we use in daily life, we have not been directly involved in the benefits
that we
reap. So is that the central theme of what you've been looking at, the collective brain, the fact that actually we've managed to outpace all other living organisms on this planet because we've actually been banking all our knowledge together so we can all share it rather than just rely on individual knowledge? Because if we had to start from scratch, we'd be very, very behind.
No, absolutely. I mean, we live in a world that none of us could recreate. But, you know, if you imagine, there's a limit to how much you can learn, you know, even if you spent your whole life learning. But if you decide to focus on just a few things and you live in a large enough society that everyone else can focus on all the different things, as long as they add up together to give you all of the things you can survive, you can focus and go more deeply so that we as a society can achieve more together. And that's the world we live in. The other side of it, I guess, that you brought up is why that can be quite kind of difficult to see. This is something that Matthew and I have spoken about a lot. And one finding in psychology, which you alluded to, is what's called the illusion of explanatory depth. And that is that, you know, when we encounter technologies, we have this vague sense that we understand them until we're actually asked to explain them. And, you know, I can give you examples of that.
Oh, I think I've got plenty of my own there, Michael. I think my daughter recently asked me to explain Wi-Fi, and I went into the conversation really confident. And after a while, even something sort of simple, you said, yeah, she said, but how? How does it get through the walls? How? And you just think, yeah, there's quite a lot that I'm not going to be able to.
Magic.
Yeah, that's what I end up talking about in the end. Matthew, thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you so much for joining us. That's Michael Muthukrishna from the LSE. Matthew, we've got a little bit of time left to continue our conversation about the book, and also I think